Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam.
Welcome back to another episode. I have Sarah with me today, and we're in the studio because my mom is visiting me, and I just didn't want the whole warsha bil bayt. Also, I'm feeling sick, so I couldn't be bothered to like do the whole setup. So here we are.
Here we are, and we are going to kickstart on a very different approach this time. I'm going to be asking a series of questions just to kind of get the ball rolling.
Do you not want to say hi to the people? No, how they are.
They know who I is.
They know who you are.
They know who I is, but I'm excited to do this because I think it'll be super fun. And we have, like, just a note to everyone. Anytime Layla and I have conversations, it's like, at the end of it, after we've done like the blood, sweat and tears, we're like, this should have been a podcast.
Yeah.
You know, but so I'm going to kickstart on some questions and just to prompt the direction of it. Do you mind?
Go for it.
All right. I'll do that. Okay. First things first. People know the real me.
I have to say if I agree or disagree.
Yes.
That people know the real you. Yes. Or me.
No, you.
No, I don't think people know the real me at all. Actually, I think a few of my followers, and I think it's the ones that have extreme spiritual connections and subhanAllah, God just has them. Because, you know, some people are more spiritually inclined than others. And they don't know me and they're absolute strangers. But there are a few that I think just fully understand and see the picture, you know, with no judgment, with no strings attached. But generally speaking, no, I don't think people know the real me. And this applies to strangers and...
But who's the real Layla?
I don't know. In Sufism, we have a thing. But I'm very careful saying it because people misunderstand it. But when you are asked, who are you? You say, I am God. And it's not astaghfirullah that you are God himself. But it's a very deep, 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 deep philosophy. But... if I had to, in like layman's terms, say who I am, I'm a Muslim. That's how I'd explain it. What about you?
You know, I ask this question a lot to people. Like, people know the real me. And a lot of people will come out and say like, oh yes, there's different iterations of you. You're ever evolving and ever changing. And like, you know, who you are yesterday is not who you are tomorrow. And all of this kind of mumbo jumbo nonsense, to be honest, because I think, yes, we are always never in a static state. We are constantly ever evolving and ever changing.
Yeah.
But for me, it's, I don't allot people the privilege of knowing who I really am. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that I've been burned so many times. So I refrain from giving myself or giving all of myself so quickly. So I'm a lot more reserved and I withhold a lot of myself. And only people who have gained the privilege and the right to access that have access to it. So in general, layman's terms, as you said, people know like
an aspect. I said layman's, like Les Miserables.
Yeah.
Because I can't.
Layman's
terms. By the way, I'm partially deaf today, so I'm struggling, yes, to even speak. But
yeah,
it's okay.
Everyone, Layla is ill and she's very still decided to come in and do a podcast. So, you know, good on her.
Woo! Anyway, continue. Sorry.
No, but so I think just generally speaking, I think you do yourself an emotional and spiritual disservice if you give yourself so effortlessly to people without feeling that they need to surpass some kind of, I don't know.
Test?
Yeah, maybe a test. Because it's a privilege. It really is a privilege for people to get to know you. And so,
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. From what you're saying, I do, alhamdulillah, I do have that. Because obviously when I was younger and being a people pleaser and wanting everyone to like me and giving too much of myself too soon and then people walking all over you and all of that stuff, I understand. I think now as well what I've learned, because we talk about this masalan in terms of relationships. For example, if a guy asks you out, let's say, and you're sitting across from them, we've realized that 9 times out of 10, we're the ones initiating conversation. We're keeping it fun and lighthearted, and we're the bread and butter of it, right? And then the advice now that we bestow upon people, because you and I don't hate, is stay quiet. See how he approaches you. See the steps he takes towards you. And I think with people, like romantic relationships aside, is I genuinely think people don't know me that well. Before me refraining from sharing too much, they don't even bother to really get to know me. Mm-hmm. So I just don't share. And this is what I realized, you know? So it's not me going out of my way to go like, no and whatever, which there is a part of that, and I'm with you, mie bil mie.
Mie bil mie. That's going to become a thing. It's going to become a thing.
I'm 100% with you on that one. But I realized that I don't give people anything anymore because they don't even bother to approach or get to know me in the right way. Like, you and I had this conversation about, with our friendship, like, and I'm grateful to you for that. You went out of your way for us to be friends. You know what I mean? And then when you sensed that I wasn't really reciprocating, you took a step back. And that's when I was like, Sarah's been asking about me a lot. I don't even call her. Like, let me, you know? And that, me not reciprocating, was out of fear. I was like, I've been burned a million times, like you said, you know? But yeah, people don't bother the way you've bothered.
A lot of people might want to play sort of that devil's advocate card for you, and they might be like, well, why don't you just volunteer information, or why don't you just like give yourself to somebody? Like, why is someone required to go through this test in order for you to deliver on? Like, why not be natural and allow it to just flow?
Because it's not in my nature anymore. Truly, it used to be in my broken nature to offer too much information, offer too much of myself, offer too much of my time, of my love, of my whatever that I had. I gave so freely because I was naive enough to hope that it would be reciprocated and given back, you know? Even if not given back more, at least given back to the same extent or the same amount. And once bitten, twice shy, never make the same mistake twice, all of those cliches. Truly, I woke up one day and just something in my head clicked, and it's just not in my nature. It takes much more of me to talk than it does to just keep to myself. Do you know what I mean?
There wasn't a defining moment that you were like, okay, never again.
There were many, but it wasn't a specific one where after that I was like, khalas. I think all of them accumulated, and then my father constantly planting seeds, certain people in my life, like my mother, or even certain shuyukh that I watch online, or, you know, the self-help things that you see, the tough love. This is why I like this, because I believe in the power of planting a seed. Because you could have something horrible happen to you now, and we can talk about it, but it doesn't hit you until like 6 months later. So I just had that happen to me at some point where I was like, what am I doing? You know? Well,
going on that tangent, the next question is a really interesting one because I know you'll love this one.
Okay.
When I need help, I don't ask for it.
SubhanAllah, I was just talking to my mom about this because we were just having an argument. When I need help, I don't ask for it. I can't say definitively yes or no. Like, I know for you, you don't ask for it. So I know that prompt rings very true with you. It takes a lot for you to ask, if you even ever ask. I sometimes find myself asking by accident, where maybe I'm feeling more in my feminine and la iradiyan, just through conversation, I'll suggest like, oh, could you do this? Or maybe we should do this. And then depending on how the person reacts is when I go like, oh my God, I'm asking for help and they're not providing, you know?
Do you ever feel guilty for asking?
Not guilty, but I feel weak for asking. And the only time I'll feel weak for asking is when they don't provide. Because it takes a lot for anyone to ask for help. And you don't ask for help unless you need help. And help, by definition, is a tough word, because it's you're lacking, it's you're in a moment of need, it's a word of need, do you know what I mean? So to ask for help and not receive it, I think the karma of the person not providing the help is a lot tougher, because you are literally not providing to someone in a moment of need. And that could very well be a test from God sending you someone to maybe allow you to be a good person, or allow you to extend a helping hand, and you refuse that? Oi, babe, that's a different kind of karma. Like, do you know what I mean? Because help, by definition, is that you are in need, you have a lack. So if you come to me for help, or you are in need, and it is something that I can easily provide and bestow upon you, and it doesn't take away from me, and I say no, do you know what I mean? That's a different kind of evil.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, unfortunately, in my life, a lot of people that I've asked for help have always said no.
And they fall short.
Yeah.
Do they in your face say no?
Yeah. Yes.
And it doesn't take away from them. Like, you're not asking for them to chop off their own leg and sew it onto your... Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but when you deal with people who are very self-serving and don't want the best for you in whatever capacity that may look like, you asking them for help is an inconvenience because it's an infringement on their livelihood. Like, they feel like you asking them for help is taking something out of their pie, is putting them or pushing them to a limit that they didn't want to be in, is requiring something that is so out there that it's like beyond their means to be able to provide. So you end up having this kind of guilt where you're like, you know, I wish I never asked you. I regret asking you. And then you just kind of get used to not asking. And I think that's why you and I have this back and forth where you're like, I can help. And I'm like, no, it just goes back and forth.
I know. And I totally understand. But I'm trying to get to the roots of this guilt thing. Because guilty to me is I did something wrong. So I don't feel that I did something wrong when I ask for help and it's not provided. I feel, and this is a lot of feelings, but I take a moment and I ask myself, why did I need to ask this person for help? Because if you put yourself in a position where you ask someone for help and then they don't provide it, and you are reopening that scab or that wound, I don't care about the other person anymore. I care about me and why I put myself in this situation, mm-hmm. you know? So I'll sit and ask myself why. But it's not guilt that I feel. I feel rage.
Do you feel it's because the sadness that you feel can only translate in rage, because they don't know how to access any other emotion other than rage, even if they're feeling sadness or betrayal, any of those types of emotions, because it's the easiest one for them to access. It's the easiest one that they've connected to, either from childhood or whatnot. So when they're upset or they are hurt, they'll act out in rage. And it's just like, I know you're hurting, but it's like, it's something that I can't, like, express. I can't show sadness. I can't show devastation. I can't show deep emotional entrenchment in the way that I feel. It's like,
but I was saying, is it an external rage? Because when I say rage, I'm very specific with that word. I don't tend to become externally angry or violent or aggressive, even though I do believe in aggression in certain situations, especially when it comes to your safety or certain transgressions. Now, that being said, my rage, just, it makes me laser focused on how to not find myself in this situation again. So I harness that rage and then I'll be like, okay, go invest it in your work. Go laser focus and dive into work and go provide for yourself and your family, and everything else is background noise. But for me personally, and this is the positive way that I've been able to harness rage, mm-hmm. is that I'll take it and allow it to fuel me to laser focus on being grateful and working harder to never have to ask someone for help again, because they're just going to slap me in the face with a no.
But then wouldn't you say that that's a healthy relationship with rage? Because yeah. I mean, the people that I'm talking about that do struggle with rage, it's like it sits in their body and they don't know how to release it. They don't know how to get rid of it.
Okay. I take that back. Healthy relationship with rage, no. Because you can never have... Rage and healthy cannot be in the same sentence. Mm. You know what I mean? So I'm still working on the rage being removed and just being able to be laser focused and disciplined without that. But I'm human and I'll see something sometimes, or something will happen. Like yesterday, I told you I saw a certain something and it just made me...
Mm-hmm. Certain something.
Ya Allah.
Which... You had every right to be rageful.
Babe, like that. But then after I hung up with you, I was sitting and I was like, you know what? God has given me everything I've wanted and more. Mm-hmm. I'm very grateful that that person's out of my life in the next steps that I'm taking forward, because she didn't belong in the blessings I have now. Mm-hmm. She does not belong on my table. That is for sure. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? So, human, I felt the anger, but... Immediately, I had to sit and go like, okay, why am I angry? This needs to go. There's no such thing as a healthy relationship with rage.
How long do you allow yourself to sit in that rage? Because some people can like fester in that for days and days and days.
I do my best to get out of it as soon as I can. This is something that you and I argue over all the time. You're just like, you have the right to feel the way you're feeling, or it's okay, don't like push it away. And I'm like, nope, it needs to go now.
She's like, oh, yep, it's coming out. I just want to reel it back
I'm
in.
I'm like, no, I can't, babe, because here's the thing. And this is where I'm tough love and with things like this. Because people be like, your feelings are valid and blah, 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 blah. To me, it's like, okay, cool. I understand that I have the right to be upset at what happened, you know? But then I always think about God will ask me, Tama'ana, I blessed you with all of this. And this is what you focused on. So, and when I look at that, I'm like, could I be sitting in front of my Prophet alayhi salatu salam angry? No, I'd be embarrassed. That's where I'm at, you know? So that's why I'm like, okay, yeah, she hurt me and I am upset, but why am I focused on that when there's so much else that I can focus on? Mm-hmm. And that to me is more important, you know? Mm-hmm. Are my feelings valid? Sure. But there are my discipline and my respect towards God matters more. That's just where it's a little back and forth, you know? But people will tell you, know, it's healthy to feel your feelings. Yeah, but that's a white terminology. Five stages of grief, that's a white man thing. That's not with us. In Islam, there are ways to process grief, and it's gratitude is number one. Like, you know what I mean? So I'd rather listen to God than listen to whatever propaganda has been shoved down my throat or what I think is best for me. Because mm-hmm. when I tried to process grief with the way I thought it was right, bro, that's a disaster. What do you mean? You know what I mean? Yeah. So yeah, like I get it. And I was angry yesterday and I even sat there and I was like, it makes sense that I'm mad. Understandably so. But if my Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam was sitting right across from me, would I be angry like this? Would I be venting to him and complaining? Mm-hmm. Bro, never.
Yeah.
تخيلي.
But isn't it fascinating how these people can bring out these types of emotions from us? Like sometimes, I mean, when you and I were discussing about certain people, I have a similar person to
yes,
yours.
You do.
And I'm just like, oh, yeah. Like I'm just like, I'm going to kill this person, you know? And it's just like, and you know, and we're like, obviously fasting for Ramadan, so it's like, Allahumma nisai me, but I'm really going to kill this person. But it's just that, it's less that I'm angry with that person. It's more that I'm angry with myself for allowing this toxicity to continue for the way that it did and not calling it out when I knew it was there. I knew it. I, like, Lord knows how many times I decided to, like, ignore my intuition and just be like, no, like, give this person a chance. Like,
how long did your thing last?
Which thing?
The whole thing. From A to Z, from when you started until you finished.
2 years.
Okay, see, mine was, like, less than 4 months.
Oh, yeah.
2 years is crazy.
Yeah, 2 years is crazy.
Like, see, I look at that and I'm like, Ahmadi Rabbik.
Yeah,
God got rid of that person. Like, absolutely. The trash took itself out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But you, 2 years is crazy.
I know, but you know. It's the cross that I bear, guys.
2 years is wild, yeah. Babe.
Yeah, I'm putting it in my du'as, okay?
Yeah.
Putting it in my du'as.
But you know what? Like, worst karma for that person.
Yeah.
But also bigger lesson for us.
Absolutely.
You know?
But when I see that, like, I did have that moment. And I know that you're going to have that moment as well, where you're, like, going to walk into a room and you're going to see that person. And you're going to be, like, being fine and looking fine and all this kind of stuff. And they're just going to be literally just, like, nothing.
Can I tell you something?
Let me tell you something.
Let me tell you something. Truly, truly, alhamdulillah, I've never asked God for something and he hasn't delivered.
Elaborate.
Everything I've ever asked him for, babe, to the T he's given me. And the things that he hasn't given me yet, subhanAllah, I realize once I receive even more that it was a me thing. Just a little thing that I had to change, just a little mentality. Maybe it wasn't the right time. He was still processing me in order to be able to handle the depth and the magnitude of what I've prayed for. And all, so on and so forth. There are two people in my life. I have looked at God and I've just been like, you know what? Alhamdulillah, I have zero complaints. See your complaints. Hardest test I've ever had to go through. But thank you so much. My one request, I never see their face again. I have not seen these two people. Mm-hmm. And I know I will go to my grave and they will go to their grave and we will never see each other in this dunya again. Mm-hmm. Okay? This person, when I tell you, I talabt min Rabna, ma arja ashuf wajha. And I'm telling you, I will never bump into this girl again. Never. Because I really believe in your angels. And I have an army behind me. Like, I've even had the sheikh go, like, if you could see the army standing behind you. And I know it. She has lost the privilege of being able to breathe the same air as me, of being in the same room as me. And yeah, people might be like, that's a little self-centered or shy for halak. Absolutely. Absolutely. Why not? God put me on this earth. God knows how much I wanted to do right by this girl. God knows how much it broke my soul, what she did to me. So yeah, you have now absolutely lost the privilege of even having the honor to look at my face.
Mm-hmm.
You can go be with peasants.
Absolutely.
You act like a peasant, you hang out with peasants.
Amen.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So I will not see that person again.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to never see your person again, wallahi, just ask God.
Yeah.
God is here for you. God wants to deliver. God wants to give you what you want.
But isn't it so interesting when we talk to like friends, family members, whatever, whenever they're stressed out about something, they're like, oh, I asked this person for help and blah, 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 and this and that. And like, I asked like my boss if they could help me out. And it's like, did you not ask God first? Why have you not asked God first? And it's like that switch or that mentality is something that like one has to recognize. And I think it can be in a twofold way of thinking. Like one is that, at least for me, it's like, I didn't think I was worthy. Like I didn't think that like for all the, maybe the sins that I, you know, committed, or that I wasn't like, I didn't feel that I was worthy of much. So then how could I ask God for something? And it's the same way that I feel about du'as that I make. I'm like, I'm always like, oh, did I make the du'a the right way? Am I worthy of getting this from God? Am I worthy of asking this? And it's like, yeah, go ahead. I feel like you want to say something.
You're right? Saying that when you pray, am I even worthy of praying this? Like for all your sins? I get it. I get what you're saying. I feel you, but you are absolutely in the wrong.
Of course.
Ask me why.
Why am I wrong?
I'm so glad you asked.
Thank you. I'm so glad you liked the fact that I asked you.
Thank you for asking. Yeah. Okay. In Arabic, we have, I don't know where this saying comes from, but we have a saying, كُلِّنْ يَرَى بِعَيْنِ طَبْعِهِ, which means everyone sees through the lens of their own nature. And people treat God at the same level that they view themselves. So it is a na'is in you. It's a lacking in you when you go ask God for something and you have doubts and fears and trepidations and hesitations. It's because you yourself are filled with doubt and fear and hesitation and trepidation, because you can't change things in this world, but God can. You can't make it rain today, but God can. So when you pray and you pray with a lacking or sinful or fearful mentality, it's simply because we are filled with that. But mm-hmm. it's disrespectful towards God if I'm praying to Him, the Almighty, with doubt in my heart as if He cannot provide.
Absolutely. And I completely agree with you. I mean, now I've come to this realization. And it's also this idea of like, why do you assign like human
traits to God? Yeah,
absolutely. It's like, it's just such a strange thing, because it's like, well, if you're viewing God in this way, you are limiting the like magnanimous nature of what God is, And so if you're sitting there going like, oh, I don't think it's possible. It's like, is that how limited your mind is?
Yes.
Is that how small-minded you think of like the Almighty Creator?
You set the ceiling of God's powers at your limitations. Absolutely. Like your ignorance is the ceiling to what Allah can do and absolutely can't do. That's crazy.
Me, but me, let's sing and praise it.
It's true. It's so hard for people to understand, because then they're like, you're not understanding my feelings and where I'm coming from. I'm like, I don't care where you're coming from. God can do anything.
Absolutely.
The second you come at me with God can't do, I can't talk to you. Like you come at me with that be realistic mindset, I can't talk to you. Because my reality is God moves mountains for me.
And God has.
He has.
Mm-hmm.
Fact.
In decision making, I follow my head rather than my heart.
Both, but not simultaneously. Because there are certain decisions where my heart matters more, because that's your gut instinct. That's your heart is what is the tether, is the glue between you and God. The more you pray, the more connected you are to Allah, the clearer the message to your heart is. So when I am in a state where I have focused enough and I've been on my spiritual path, and especially during Ramadan when I'm fasting, that tethering with my heart and God, I feel it. So اللي بيجي على قلبي, I follow, and it always rings true. But when I'm in the hustle and bustle mentality of work and moving and whatever, feelings go completely aside. My heart can scram. Logic needs to win. But the goal is to reach the sweet spot where both are so intertwined and know the right thing to do. And I would like to believe that I'm more often than not there. where my heart and brain don't fight anymore, because I actually like myself. It took me a long time to realize this, but I actually don't hate myself. And I'm done making decisions that put me in a position where it's almost masochistic and I'm torturing myself either with a toxic friendship or relationship, whatever it is. And then one day I woke up and I was like, no, I actually like myself. So my heart and my brain are aligned. Mm. They just want me to be happy and they want me to be dignified in front of God. Because if I said it once, I'll say it a million times. I refuse to meet my God a liar or a coward or a traitor.
That goes to the next question.
What about you? Before the next question, you answer.
No. I'm asking the questions here.
No, this is... But you, I feel like you make decisions with... I feel like you're the same.
Yeah, I think I'm the same.
I think you're the same.
I do like head and heart for sure. But like when I am reactionary.
Are you?
Yes. I whatever my gut reaction is, that is how I will approach a situation. So remember the stuff that we were dealing with like today and yesterday?
Yes, yes, yes.
I was like straight, my heart was telling me, and I was like, but then the logic came in where I was like, logically speaking, you should have done A, B, and C and not done D, E, and F.
But you said that from the start.
Mm-hmm. But
you were logical from the start, despite the fact that you had an emotional reaction to it. And I don't mean emotional like, oh, you were over emotional, but you were upset and you were like مدايقة على الموضوع, rightfully so. Mm-hmm. But you didn't change from yesterday to today, even though you thought of it logically. Oh, what you said remained. So even when you're emotional, you're still logical.
True. No, absolutely. And I think it's an interesting one because it's like, usually I'll have an opinion about something and very rarely do I change my mind, but I'm like, surprise me, enlighten me. And then I'll probably change it in accordance to how this conversation is going to go.
Yes.
But whatever my intuitive feeling is from the jump, that's probably how I feel it, because you best believe it's coming from a source of complete and utter intuition.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I know, I say what I mean and I mean what I say. Mm. So when you and I have these conversations where you're like, I'm wrong about this, or like I'm right about how I feel about certain things, prove me wrong. And it's like when you feel let down when someone doesn't do that and they prove you right, you're like,
yeah, I understand what you mean.
But then I'll go to this question because it follows that line of logic.
Babe, you really like wrote things down. I love that.
Have you ever changed your opinion about something that you never thought you would?
Yeah, absolutely. I change my mind a lot. Even with this podcast, and I've said it before, but when people go like, aren't you scared of being canceled? I'm like, no, never. Because I can say something and then come out and be like, I've changed my mind. My heart has softened towards this. And I've said it before where I'm like, I used to be so intense about this, but now I'm like, maybe, you know? I have many a time. Yeah. But I also think that's okay. And this is why I'm so against cancel culture, because it doesn't allow you to be at fault or think something and then change your mind. Mm-hmm. But how do you want to grow with your religion if you're not allowed to change your mind? And if the أطلع من بطن أمي وأنا بنفس أفكر نفس الشيء until the day I die, that doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
I've never been a cancel culture enthusiast. I think it's ridiculous. And I think also, who made you judge and jury? Like, who made you the person to decide who should be canceled and who should be redeemed? And I think that we've witnessed over the last couple of years, whether it's in the media, whether it's in our own lives and our own experiences, like, people can be very finicky about where they stand, where they draw the line, where their ideologies stand. And then they'll be like, this person deserves cancellation. This person does it. It's like, who made you judge and jury?
I agree to an extent, because there are some people that I think absolutely should be canceled and just, how is this even legal? Mm-hmm. But you know what?
But is that a gray area?
Mm,
like, because I mean, people who like deserve to be canceled, usually it's very black and white. It's very binary.
Listen, actually, I'll take it back. I don't know about deserves to be canceled, because I get it, the freedom of speech thing and the being able to say certain things. I understand. But always when there's the concept of freedom of speech, the waters get muddy and murky, because I'm of the firm belief, this is me, that your rights end where mine begin. Mm-hmm. So even if despite the fact that, let's say, I would have freedom of speech, my freedom of speech doesn't allow me to come insult you or disgrace you, or because before anything, I'm a Muslim and aha, mam khair inshallah. You know what I mean? All because it's my right, it's my right. I find that very, very odd. That being said, there are certain things online that I think shouldn't be online, or certain personalities that we've allowed to become so famous and so powerful that shouldn't be. They've corrupted society. But then that begs the question, like, who got them there? And it's us. And I've said this before, but for example, when I had that panel for Citizen Cosmetics, and it's so amazing to see how much people virtue signal. They're like, yeah, but we're not, you guys aren't providing products for what we ask for, and like this and that. And I was like, I'm gonna stop you right the hell there, okay? Do you know how much money, millions of dollars, goes into like marketing and the psychology of marketing and the research? They do the research, but and then they give you the product, you don't want it. Do you know what I mean? So people go like, no, we want more clean, we want more Palestinian. Okay, well, go buy it. But then they don't. They'll still go back to what they want. Like, one of the simplest examples, and I'm going to put them on blast here, L'Oreal. They're boycott. My friends work at L'Oreal, okay? I won't specify which brand and which name, but they said that in May of last year, the stores, not one person went inside, and they were freaking out, like, we're about to lose a whole lot of money. The online sales, the highest they'd seen in years. So this virtue signaling that people come at you with, do you know what I mean? I'm like, then stay in your garbage. Remain in this landfill that you guys have built for yourself. You know what? Don't cancel anyone. Let's stay as we are. I just went on a rant for no reason. But do you get what I mean?
I do.
Like, they preach like, oh no, we need to cancel this person. How dare they speak?
Yeah. I know. It's like, have you been canceled?
Me?
Yeah.
No. I've had a video or two. I've only had ever two or three videos where I lost a couple thousand followers because I referenced Andrew Tate.
She's about to lose a couple thousand more.
No, the thing is, I used to agree with him. And I still find that I agree with a lot of what he says. Up until recently, where he's come out with a few things where I'm like, up, I'm going to stop you right there. You're attacking my Muslim brothers and sisters. We're going to have a problem. Mm-hmm. Like, he came out and talked about this person who in a car ran over people in Germany. Mm-hmm. And he just on the PPD podcast.
Which
You know PPD?
No. Which guy was he talking about?
I don't know. There was an incident in Germany where someone ran over people walking in the street or something like that, okay?
But the guy wasn't
Muslim. So Andrew goes on this show.
Yeah.
And says it's a Muslim driver. And then it comes out and it was actually a man named Alexander who was not Arab or Muslim. And the person who tried to stop him was a Muslim man named Muhammad. So a Muslim actually risked his life to stop this psycho from killing people. And it's just, this is the second or third time Andrew has gone on a rampage blaming Muslims for certain issues. And I'm like, dir balak. Like, you're now messing with fire. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not even talking about this earth. I'm talking about God. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, God will take care of you. Mm. I just, this is the one thing that I always pray to God. I'm like, don't make me too big for my own good. Mm. If I ever step out of line, smite me. Mm. If I ever get too cocky or too egotistical because I have money, smite me. You know? So yeah, I'm referenced Andrew Tate once or twice. I just said, oh, I saw Andrew Tate say this, and then I commented on it, and then people lost their minds. And then the video about, I don't understand why women rate themselves a 10 out of 10, because there's so much more growth to do. I didn't reference men. I didn't talk about physicality. I just talked about women as a totality and about how I would love to rate myself a 6 or a 5 or whatever it is, because I want to grow more. And it has nothing to do with men or with looks or whatever. But bain you bain hali, me, myself, and I, when I'm sitting between my God and me, I could never look at God and be like, oh, I'm a 10 out of 10. That's insane. This is why I don't understand people. They're so out of touch with reality because they remove God from the conversation. They talk a big game. Like, we were talking about some of these male podcasters, and I was like, would they sit and say this in front of God? And then you were like, but they don't really care. And I'm like, that's crazy to me. Because I operate from a place of God is watching me. Like, I need to act as if the Rasul alayhi salatu salam is walking with me every step of the way, literally, physically here with me. Do you know what I mean? So, that's my little rant.
I know, and it's so funny.
Did I make sense?
No, it did, but it was just really funny because it's like, You and I have this conversation all the time where it's like, there's so many gym bros out there and they have like the goal to kind of complain about us. Like, you know, don't give this woman a mic. And it's just like, how many gym bros have a podcast where they're like, man, like I was, you know, I've decided to go sober. And you're like, so you stopped drinking alcohol. So you're taking a page out of like the Muslim book. Great. Amazing. Fantastic. Love that for you.
Fantastic.
And then it's like, oh yeah. Like, you know, bro, I'm like biohacking. It's like, oh, so you're dieting. So you're just like, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like this new terminology and like phraseology that they use in order to make them sound like different or othered from the rest of the community. And it's just this like elevated way of addressing themselves, and people buy into it. They're like,
so much.
Or like the amount of gym bros that have just been like, oh man, you know, like intermittent fasting. I'm like, okay, so fasting. So like fasting.
Yeah.
Like from sunrise to sunset.
Yeah.
So
Islam.
Yeah. So Islam. It's like, oh, I stopped drinking alcohol. Like, you know, I don't care about dry January. It's every month. It's February, it's March, it's April. And you're like, so what must have, okay, great, thank you.
This is the one thing where I might sound a little salty and I'm okay with it, because I get so much grief over my hair and my makeup and my nails. Mm-hmm. Babe, so too much grief. Like, you've seen my comments. It's actually insane. But then these men can talk and they can post their thirst traps at the gym shirtless, and their fashion posts, and they're sitting in a podcast room talking about Islam. Their followers skyrocket. Their views skyrocket. And I see the girls in their comments because they think maybe he'll notice them and wife them up. And I'm like, you must be joking. You must be joking.
But it's the same way that we feel about a lot of people that have come out publicly as like Muslims and advocating for Islam. But like one of the very poignant aspects of Islam is discipline.
And then they talk about multiple women and like
you know, this is my haram in the dunya. Woo! And like, you know,
I like women.
Yeah, my vice. And it's like, you know, this is like, I will answer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala about it. And you're like, and it's all the same thing. If you don't notice, it's all the same thing.
Yeah.
All of them. And it's like, how many of the brethrens that come out and they're
the
just
the mothers
like,
of my children.
Yeah, just like mothers.
Mothers.
Yeah, and not like wives.
Yeah.
Just
they don't
women.
Even say, I know, it's very sad. But the thing is about these dudes, some of them, the content that they put out is actually decent. Mm-hmm. Like they say some nice things, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And even their like gym videos and they're well-rounded all around, you mm-hmm. know? So love it for them. Mm-hmm. More power to you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like I'm very of the mentality, I'm not of a scarcity mentality. I'm very much of a dinya kbira wa bitsa' al-kul, which means this earth is big and it fits all of us and God has enough to go around for everyone.
Yeah.
But like, I post one thing that's out of line and people are like, astaghfirullah, sister. Like, for example, my pole dancing, right? Mm-hmm. So I've been going to the pole studio for 3 or 4 years. I don't post when I'm dressed for pole gym.
Yeah.
Okay, which is like the shorts and the sports bra. I don't post that online. Mm-hmm. I don't want to post it online, mm-hmm. okay? But when I'm fully, fully dressed in like the long sleeves and the sweat, baggy shirt and baggy sweats, and we're doing a little routine, because also I love to promote the studio and I like to promote my instructors because they're hardworking and disciplined as anything, you know? Mm-hmm. And they've really helped me. So every now and then a little routine and I'll post it. And it's very decent. We don't do anything too sexual. Nothing like that. I had one girl find me just to comment, how dare you promote pole dancing when you're talking about Islam? I'm sorry. Find me the reference. It says I can't do that. Find me the one.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it's just like, let me be. I'm not posting my skinny leggings and my butt. Like, let me be. I'm so tired.
Do you think it's because society has allowed the flexibility of condemning women more than they condemn men? So like...
See, the thing is, I'm not a feminist and I don't want to get too much
about,
into
it's
that.
It's not about feminism. It's just about like, you call things out for what they are. And I think that we have lived in communities. It's like the idea of like you doing the podcast and how many comments have I seen where it's like, where is your hijab, sister? And it's just
tabarruj.
Yeah, like it's just, and like, you know, I've never seen like with the men, it's like, where is your lihya? You know, like where is like, and it's just, it feels. You know what I mean? It feels like there's a double standard, or it's like, even with these gym boys, like these Muslim gym bros, it's like, I see a lot in that gym photo. I see too much. Astaghfirullah.
Keep it halal.
Put it away. You know?
Literally.
And it's just, but then it's like, will you do the same thing for a woman, you know? Like, or if you do it for a woman, or you do say, you know, the same thing for a woman, how are you approaching it? And is it more women that are doing it than men in terms of making these comments? Because, like, the funniest thing is, like, when you get these comments from people who were just like the other day, a rant, it was just quite funny. Someone was talking about how I put way too much blush on my face. And they were just like, she looks like a cloud. And
I think we talked about that. Yeah,
and it was just like, but when I clicked on her profile picture, who's a clune?
Babe.
Who is a clune?
I had a girl DM me. Sister, your hijab, astaghfirullah, I'm saying this for you. It's so disappointing. You speak of Allah. Babe, I pressed on her DP.
Was it what I thought it was?
Babe, it was... She and the plastic surgeon are best buddies. BFFs. Two peas in a pod.
Two pods in a pea.
Do you know... Yeah, two peas... Not what?
No, I'm just like... It's like jam on toast, toast on jam.
Yeah. Do you remember that there's a specific person I always send you on Instagram and you're like, you're clearly... Babe...
There's... By the way, people who are going to be listening to this rather than watching it, they're just going to hear like radio silence while you're just looking. She's looking at me attentively.
I'm just like, honestly, this is my little rant. People are going to listen like, Layla, you're complaining a little bit too much. But I'm going to be honest, I am a little frustrated because I'm genuinely trying, you know, and I'm very motivated by the people who DM me that they've converted to Islam or they've found a relationship with God or renewed the relationship with Allah. I'm extremely motivated by it. And it kind of breaks my heart how I don't get invited to panels. Brands won't approach me. A lot of these things, you know what I mean? But then I see these men and they can do it all. And it's just like, okay, cool. But what about the rest? Because in Islam, traditionally, women are... powerful, and they're there, and they fight wars, and they don't actually fight wars, but they lead, like they take charge. Do you know what I mean? And it's not true that a woman couldn't tell a man what to do. Sitna Aisha has very much told men what to do, very much. And it's not to compare myself to Sitna Aisha, like she is Umm al-Mu'mineen. But
why do you think that they'll give more?
But she leads by example, so we follow her in her footsteps. Do you see what I mean?
I see what you mean, but then I think to myself, like, okay, when you think about these people who are, you know, famous or, you know, influencers or whatnot, and they are, like, Muslim influencers, would you say that there are more men influencers than there are
women? I don't know a single female Muslim influencer like me. There are the niqabis and the hijabis, and they're literally scholars or whatever, and, you know, more power to you. But here, I haven't seen anyone like me, no.
So do you feel like it's like they don't know what to do with you?
Yeah. Yeah. Also, yeah. Maybe. That's fine.
I'm going to scroll you. Next question. Have you cried in the last 72 hours?
Yesterday. We talked about this.
Well, the audience doesn't know.
Yeah. I cried yesterday. When I get sick, I get emotional. Mm-hmm. We've established this. I've said this on the show before. When I get sick, it's the only time I get emotional.
Yeah.
And it's just, I will have a visceral reaction to anyone who tries to bring drama at my doorstep. I will have a visceral cutthroat, I will drag you to hell and back reaction, because I'm turning 30 and I'm sick of it. We're not 16, we're not in high school, you have no business causing an upheaval and disturbing my peace, especially that I don't show up at your doorstep with that kind of trash. Don't you dare show up to my doorstep with that kind of trash. And if you do, it is for two reasons. You are either so self-centered that you have not even acknowledged my presence in this equation, or you simply don't care and I have not put the fear of God enough in you. So try me and I will put the fear of God in you. I'm so sick of it. So yesterday, because I was a little sick, the second something happened like that and it felt disrespected, I just went to Fadi and I was like, and I cried, but then I got it together and I was like, yeah, I'm just gonna remove myself. You don't respect me, you do not have the honor of being around me. وشايفة حالي. Yes, I am self-centered that way. Because if I won't be, who's going to be?
That's true. Amen to that.
When's the last time you cried?
Probably yesterday.
What?
Or the day before. I cry like literally every other day.
Why?
Because I'm like...
Do I know why? No. I do know why.
Probably.
Like, is it like everything?
Everything. Yeah. Yeah. But also it's like I'm... And I've said this before. It's like if I'm on the emotional scale between a 4 and a 6, I'm crying.
Out of 10?
Yeah. So if I... Like, if I'm a 4 and a 6, like, between 4, 5, and 6, I'm good. If I'm a 3 or if I'm a 7, I'm crying. My moon is in Cancer, so, yeah.
My moon is in Virgo. And the moon happening on the 14th is, it's in Virgo and Pisces.
Listen, Venus is still in the microwave, so we've just got to deal with that.
Venus is in the microwave.
But, yeah, I'm just always, like, if I'll watch a video of a dog being rescued because it was abandoned, I will be in floods of tears.
Shambles.
I will be hyperventilating.
Yeah.
And it's like anything can set me off. But
an ugly crying.
Oh yeah. Horrendous.
Yeah.
And
like Kim Kardashian crying.
Yes, absolutely. And it's just, that's just the way it is. But I think it's also because I think for me, I don't actually. I used to think crying was a weakness. And so I cry in the comfort of my own home, but I will never show weakness to the enemy and cry in front of them. So my crying happens behind closed doors. And that's why a lot of the time people be like, you're so strong and you're so this and you're so that. Like, we've been through the ringer. We've had a lot of really crazy experiences happen to us that people won't even think to comprehend. But we cry in the comfort of our own home because I also think that crying in front of somebody is a privilege because you having access to my vulnerability is something that I just don't give willy-nilly. Like, this is something that I think is sacred. So I'm not going to just volunteer my vulnerability to you so you can either take advantage of it or use and abuse it in ever which way you think. So for me, if you witness me crying, it's a privilege. You're welcome.
I agree.
A woman's intuition is always right.
A divine woman, a woman in touch with her femininity, a woman who knows her purpose, a woman who protects her peace, yeah. But a woman in a toxic relationship, no. Maybe sometimes God sends that intuition as a warning signal, like get out, and that's by his grace and by his mercy. But yeah, your intuition that's given from God, always right. Your feelings... And your mind, especially your broken mind, that prison that you lock yourself in, no, it'll put you in the worst of situations. That's why you find people in toxic relationships or stuck in vicious cycles. I don't know. I think women can be really dangerous when they're broken. First and foremost to themselves. If they have children, God help their children. But I think a broken mind is a very dangerous one. You know what I mean?
I do, but I want you to elaborate on what defines a broken mind in a woman.
Do you see what I mean, though?
I do see what you mean, but then I want to piggyback off of what you just said, which was like, whose fault is it then? And I know you can say like,
men.
Well... Okay, let's try that again. Okay, thank you for that statement. Can you elaborate to the audience?
Yes.
Okay, tell me.
No, ask your question.
Okay. Who is held responsible, men or women, when it comes to the way things are in society?
So you know how you asked me before if there's anything I ever changed my mind about? I used to blame women entirely, that feminism was the reason men are so weak and stupid and weak. Men are so weak, bro. I'm still always on the fence and back and forth with that because, okay, if women messed up with the whole suffragists and feminism and whatever, and all of that, men are leaders and they're supposed to be leaders and they're supposed to come back and be like, nope. I don't care. Hit your head in every wall. No, I'm not giving you what you want because it's not right. So at first I used to blame women. And then I'm like, but men are leaders. Now that the dust has kind of settled and we know where each one went wrong, now I'm like, khalas, men, do better. Like, stop giving. Okay, well, you know how we talked about those gym bros and like talking about not wives, the mothers of my children, mm-hmm. right? I'm like, okay, but you're not really helping the situation, are you? As a man, it's so interesting when I see these men talk about discipline when it comes to the gym and money and be a warrior and be a fighter in a garden and not a gardener in a war and whatever the hell, all that stuff they say. And I'm like, but none of you talk about the discipline of being with one woman, of like keeping it in your pants and controlling yourself because it takes away from you. Because it's not just a woman thing, even Islamically. It takes so much from a man when he takes part in these extracurricular activities. But we don't want to talk about that, you know? So now I blame the men. Because if the men weren't giving in to the women, who do women have to do it for anymore? Do you know what I mean?
But then I'll throw that back in your face and say, but then there's the rise of like OnlyFans and there's the rise of accessibility to a lot of women.
Who buys OnlyFans? Who pays for it?
Mm-hmm. Man. Or the Bonnie Blue stuff. Blech. Oh, that was hard. That was really hard.
Babe, it's disgusting.
It is horrendous. And
it's
what's
disgusting.
The
Lily Phillips?
Oh, Lily. Oh, haram.
Astaghfirullah.
Haram. Like, I think feel it's disgusting. So bad for these women.
I think Bonnie Blue is a sociopath.
Yeah, I absolutely.
I think Lily Phillips is a broken mind.
Yeah, this is. I really genuinely believe this, and you and I have had this conversation. Watching interviews with her, the monotone, the dead in her eyes, the inability to emote.
She looks like the White Walkers.
The White Walkers
from Game of Thrones. Bonnie Blue looks like a White Walker.
Yeah, but. When that woman speaks, yeah. I was like, girl, she is a sociopath and a half, for sure. And she like feels nothing when she like causes pain to someone. She just has this dead look in her eyes and she's like, yeah, I lied. And
astaghfirullah, I don't even want to think about her.
Yeah.
It's nasty. It's a lot.
The heebie-jeebies.
No, heebie-jeebies for sure. Allah hafazna. That's actually, but see, that's one thing, for example. I told you about how I was scrolling on my For You page. I don't know why these girls keep popping up for me. Algorithm was really trying me. And there was a girl. She's on OF in the States. And I was like, okay, I'm going to see something. And I went on her page and she was at 2.8 million or something. And I was like, I'm going to come back in 2-3 weeks and check again. 2-3 weeks, I come back and I check again. Lo and behold, she's gained almost 1 million followers. Again, people ask why I'm so harsh and why we generalize or whatever, but the proof is in the pudding. It's in the numbers. More people gravitate towards filth. More people gravitate towards a lack of discipline. More people gravitate towards a victim mentality.
Because it's easier, because it's such a dunya mentality. People don't care about the akhirah. People don't care what's going to happen at you know, on the day of judgment or what they're going to take with them when they leave. And
nothing. We take nothing.
But in their minds, they're like, I'm living. It's like, it's that mentality of like carpe diem, you know? Live in the moment. Joie de vivre. Like, it's just, that's the mentality that they have.
I wish they were even happy. They're miserable. Most people are miserable.
But don't you think that people, a lot of the days, like, at least in recent times, they have this kind of, like, live in the moment mentality to such a degree where they forget, like, half of the stuff that they say, it's like, that's going to be on the internet forever.
That's my point.
Forever.
Babe, honestly, like, screw the internet.
Talk to, girl?
Oh,
that's forever.
Yeah, but babe, that's a culture thing. Like, in over there, you can make a sex tape and become a billionaire. So it's completely fine. Here it's different. And alhamdulillah, I hope we always stay this way.
Mm. Yeah, inshallah.
I think bring back shame, bring back bullying, bring back accountability. Because did I say accountability?
It's fine.
I can't hear out of this ear.
Like, you're sick and this is what you're coming out with.
So partially deaf right now.
Yeah. Can you hear what I'm saying?
Barely.
If I do this.
Believe it or not, I almost crashed my car like twice because I couldn't really visualize the side.
No.
Wild. Anyway, what do you think, men or women? It's the chicken or the egg at this point. But I think now men. Khalas. I'm very ready for the men to come take charge.
I think definitely waiting for the men to come and take charge. But what I'm liking is advocating for the polarity so people have range to see what the world has to offer. Like, we've been completely oversaturated with the OF women and like people just promoting certain lifestyles and just being like, you get money when and like all of this kind of stuff. But then you're getting like, you know, the Nara Smiths in the corner or the people who are like, yay, trad wives. So you get this sort of, you get both polarities. So they do exist. Good and evil does exist. Light and dark does exist. And
there's so much hate under the trad wives comments.
Of course there is. But it still exists. There is like a market for it because like, look at Nara Smith. I mean, she's literally just existing in her outfits, making banana bread. And you know what? I want to make banana bread too.
Yeah.
So when I look at her videos, I'm just like, you know what? She's living her best life.
Yeah. I think the reason Nara Smith is so good at being a trad wife, and it's not to take away any credit from her, but it's because she has a man who's allowing her to do so. If she was with a half-absent father, barely there for the kids, didn't provide financially, didn't cater to her, care for her, or love her, or nurture the relationship, do you think she'd be happy-go-lucky cooking banana bread in a $10,000 outfit?
Clearly, but also there's other elements. Like, Nara Smith has been very vocal about being religious. And
she, they're Mormon.
Yeah, they're Mormon. And so there's certain practices and traditions she grew up with.
But what makes a woman a good, and it's not to take away from her, but what allows her to be a good mother and a good partner is a good husband. And I've seen it. I've seen how women behave when their partner just takes and takes and takes and doesn't give back. Mm-hmm. They crumble. Because it's not meant to be that way.
But have you seen better examples of good men versus good women? Because I haven't seen great men. And that's, you and I've had this conversation before. Like, I mean, there's, I can count on like two fingers, not even like two hands, two fingers of like men that I've seen that like are really decent men and their wives are really happy. And they are the embodiment of what like a traditional man should be and like a conventional kind of whatever. But with women, I can name so many amazing women. So for me, it's like I would be more inclined to think that it is the men's responsibility.
So
fight me on it.
No, I don't want to fight you. I agree with you, except for the I'm struggling to even talk. Except for the fact that I know some amazing women, because I brought this up in front of my dad, and he is one of the few people who has the ability to actually make me change my mind. He was like, I disagree. And then we talked about it behind the scenes. Mm. And I do disagree. Babe, number one, you and I have more girlfriends than we do guy friends.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Number two, the way we are together and the way you present to me and how I see you, in my mind, and I'll even say it because I've said it many a time, it's my interview with Entrepreneur TV is coming out and I cry about you. Literally.
Like bawling?
Like literally. Anyway, fantastic. But you have also said it. We know in theory what we want when it comes to that great, great man and how we'd behave. But in practicality, I don't know how I'd react if I got what I prayed for. I don't know. Would I handle it with grace? Mm-hmm. Would I accept it with love and with dignity? I don't know. Now, what I've realized is I thought I knew some pretty great women. And it's not to take away from women because I don't know any great men. So I'm not saying, oh, I don't know any great women and the men are amazing. Not at all. I have not met a good man yet. But these women behind the scenes and how they behave, not so great. I'm going to give you one example.
Mm.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
I'm waiting for you to.
I can't say it, but I'm just going to say.
That person. Yeah.
And then you were like, I'm sorry, I didn't know.
Yeah.
So that's my point. You don't, as a friendship, cool, but you don't know how they're going to behave in a romantic setting because romantic settings tend to bring out all of our wounds. They bring out your crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So in theory, do I know some decent women? Eh. No, but babe, honestly, no. I don't know anyone other than you and me who will put her feelings aside to stand for truth, who will say, it doesn't matter what I want or what I think I want or what will make me happy. This is what God needs me to do and this is the right thing to do. I don't know a woman who will sit and to my face not lie to me, who will not gossip, who will not talk about me, who I can turn around and if I'm getting in a cop car, she's getting in a cop car with me. I don't. I only know one or two. Mm-hmm. You and someone else, I've mentioned this on my podcast, but Sarah Hella, she'll call me and be like, did you talk about me? And I'm like, yeah. But I don't know people like that. I don't know people who go to war with me and die with me.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm.
So no, they're not great women. I'm sorry. They're not.
I know a few, but I think also...
Will they go to war with you?
They might. And the reason why I say they might is because it goes back to the kind of... I was talking to my younger sister about this, that like when we talk about our experiences and trauma, it's fight, flight, or freeze. And we can say this 1,000 times over. There are people that I know that will, you know, freeze. There's people that I know that will literally flight. Like they'll run for the first exit stage right.
Mm.
I fight.
Mm.
I'm not a flight and I'm not a freeze. Same. I will fight. And I think that that's not always a good thing because it puts us in a situation where I've said this in another podcast and I think in my own, where I'm like, these women are always ready to go to war. And it's because we need so much, just generally women who are like this. They are always ready to put their masculine foot forward.
You said this on Dose of Emirates.
Did I? Yeah, maybe.
You did.
And that I think is also quite problematic because if you're thinking about it in the context of like a man and a woman's relationship, it's like, yeah, a woman can be great in theory and in practice with her girlfriends, but the way that she is in a relationship is hopefully not going to be that. She has to be the antithesis of that because if she's leading the charge and she's forward facing and she's assertive and she's aggressive and she's disagreeable in her relationship, she's with a weak man. She doesn't feel safe. That's it. So in my mind, like, I don't know if it's a good thing that women want to go to war. I don't know if it's a good thing that I'm always ready in traumatic situations to fight. And I think that, do I know women who will do that? Yes, but I know women that will take a step back before they lead the charge. Like they won't be on the front. They'll be in the, they'll be part of the army forces, but they won't be the front line.
Women in nature shouldn't be in the front lines anyway, because women, by the way, even those Ziftatin IDF soldiers, you think they're fighting on the front line? No, the women are not on the front. That's not a thing. There is no army where women are on the front lines fighting, like in the world. That doesn't exist, so get that out of your head. But I get what you're saying, but I'm not talking about a knee-jerk reaction of going to war. But I'm talking about in this life, what do I always say? This dunya is designed to test you. And some of these tests require action. When I say ready to go to war, I don't literally mean be aggressive and go fight. But will she stand by you? Will she support you? Will she... What did I tell you yesterday? The friend of my enemy is not my friend. I don't care what you say. You will never convince me that I have an enemy. And you're talking to my enemy and hanging out with my enemy. And you think we're friends. Do I look like a fool? Is stupid written on my forehead? Because I know human nature. I know how titillating gossiping is. How exciting you feel when you think you've got the inside scoop and you guys are talking. And I've said it before. I forgive gossip very easily. But you absolutely have no access to me. And if you don't have the backbone to stand up to someone who's betrayed me, I don't need you in my life. غيرك عشرة.
Yeah.
You don't serve a purpose anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. No hard feelings. But be on your merry way. And you do not belong on my table ever again. And I will never let you back in again. And I have no qualms about that. No problems. I don't feel guilty. Very happy. I'll sleep with a very light heart and a very easy conscience.
Yeah.
Cool? But I don't mean the aggressive knee-jerk reaction. Because if you're like that, you and I have this conversation all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Mm. You're very ready to pour water. And I'm like, you need to sit back and look pretty. Okay? But I'm talking about, it's that's maybe figuratively speaking, but I'm talking about the ability, no matter what comes, I will stand up for what is right. And I, no matter what happens, will always stand by you.
Mm-hmm.
I told you this.
Yeah.
I will, in public, stand with you.
Mm-hmm.
Behind the scenes, hakitani, wadi, we can go at it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what the hell did you just do?
Yeah, yeah.
And you will do the same.
Mm-hmm.
But you will not berate me in public because what are you doing? You know what I mean? And I get that. But I trust you enough to know that you're never going to screw up like that. You know what I mean? Do we make mistakes and we falter here and there? Sure. But about, I don't know women who will stand up for me. I know you would, because even yesterday when we got on a certain call, I was like, don't get involved. And you're like, bro, I'm just talking to you as a friend. I'm not. But I was like, no, I know you. You're passionate and you care and you might. Mm-hmm. You might even say something just because dhamirik, your conscience doesn't allow you to like sit idly by and see like wrong transpire.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that about you.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes even then I had to protect you. I'm like, don't get involved.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't concern us. You know
what
I mean? But again, if you want to stand up for a friend, that's also your prerogative. You know what I mean?
It's also about, for me, and maybe this is like the inner Libra, as one would say, I cannot stand seeing injustice.
Yeah, you don't sit idly by.
I cannot do that. And I feel like, yes, maybe it's not my place to say something that doesn't concern me. I don't need to insert myself into this chat room. I completely understand that. But when we talk about injustice just on a macro lens,
mm-mm.
when I see that happening and no one stands, I can't.
I know. I can't. Me too. Visceral reaction.
No.
Visceral.
And I don't care. And I can do this even with people that I don't necessarily like. If I see somebody mistreating someone and it's like there is a level of injustice that is, you know, in front of my face and I don't say anything. Oh, no, I can't. There are a few women that I know that will do that. But interestingly enough, I've had friends in the past who I'm no longer friends with that I had to school them in I'm like, are you going to stand readily by and allow this kind of situation to happen? And they were like, no, but I don't know. And they're like, actually, you know what? You're right. And
so a learning opportunity.
It's a learning opportunity. But interesting enough, they're all people that I no longer speak to. So for me, the same way that you were saying before, if I am no longer friends with you, I will cut you out and you cease to exist in my life. We are no longer friends. You don't have access to me. The door is that way. Don't let the door hit you on the way out, because I'm not that mean, but my silence is going to be enough, you know, anger and frustration your way.
Honey. I am that mean. The door can hit you on the way out.
Well, you know, I think...
can hit you twice where the sun don't shine.
Three times over.
Every day and twice on Sunday.
These people will never have access to my life anymore because having me in their life was a privilege.
Yeah.
And they lost that privilege like nobody's business. They will never have a friend like me.
Yeah,
they will never have a friend like me.
I agree.
And because you know.
I agree.
I'm ride or die.
Now you are.
Really am.
You're the only person in the world that I've said, that I've told, and I've said it to my brother, so he is my witness, that I, no matter what happens, I wouldn't allow us not to be friends at some point, like ever. Anyone, I'm usually like, yeah, okay, they can go, I don't care. You know what I mean? We don't need to discuss it. There's a misunderstanding, I don't care. You're the only person that I would call up and be like, no, let's sit and discuss what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it. That's all I wanted to say.
I appreciate that.
Thanks, Vibes.
I appreciate you.
I appreciate you too. No, really, truly, because you've seen it, babe. Cutting people off is my... Favorite pastime.
I'll be on the phone to Layla just to kind of give people context who don't know you and have the privilege of, you know, having access into the window of your life. Is that I'll be on the phone to Layla and I'll just be like, listen, Layla, like, I really think that you should like have a conversation, see how you feel about it. And you're like, nope, they're done. And I'm like, yeah, but you know, just think about it. Like, nope, it's like they are dead to you so fast.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
Because two things. I think it's doing myself a disservice at this age, after everything I've been through, if I still need to explain to you how you wronged me mm-hmm. and where you faltered.
Absolutely.
If we need to have that conversation, there are two things. I put myself at risk that you don't even understand or grasp what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So then I'm almost borderline begging you to understand how you mm-hmm. wronged me. And that's just unfathomable. I can't imagine disgracing myself and putting myself in this position.
Mm-hmm.
And then number two is, if you put me in a position where I need to explain to you, you're either not grown enough to understand, which means we're in two separate stages in life and we don't belong in each other's lives, or you're just playing dumb. And I, you know what? It just doesn't make sense to me. Like, the math ain't mathing and I don't understand how we got here. So why are we even here is where I'm at.
When you have an argument with somebody and you...
I don't argue.
When you have a quandary with somebody or a disagreement or a dispute with somebody and they're your friend and they are asking you to explain why you are upset with them, what they are actually asking you is like, hey, can you do all the emotional labor and do all the heavy lifting in this two-way dynamic so I don't have to lift a finger?
Depends.
That is what they're doing. No. Point blank, period. It's the hill that I'm going to die on, because a lot of the time, if you are friends with somebody, like, unless they're shy of being mentally inequipped to comprehend a conversation, then you can excuse them for their inability to understand the situation that you're at hand.
But we had this.
No, wait. But if I have to sit there and give you a full play-by-play of what went down, and then I have to explain to you further, and then I have to get into the nuance of it, honey, What you're asking is for me to do all the emotional heavy labor and heavy lifting of this conversation. And therefore, I already know it's not an even playing field. And I know that even the apology or the response that I'm going to get from you is not going to be genuine because you have already half-assed it. And let me explain. This is not to say that if you have a disagreement with someone, and I know what you're getting at, so bear with me.
I don't think you do know where I'm getting at.
No, I do. That if someone has wronged, like if you're in a spat with somebody and they've wronged you, they have every right to ask you what's gone on so that they can learn and then they can move forward so it doesn't happen again. Yes. So they can course correct. Yes. I totally understand that. But there is a fundamental difference between I'm asking because I want to better myself and this is to the betterment of my self-growth and self-mastery versus like, I don't know why you're mad. And like, what's the issue?
Okay. Do you see what I mean? Of course.
Because it's like this emotional labor that one has to do. And it's usually coupled with like a side of victimhood where you're like, I can't. I cannot do this.
Okay. That makes sense.
So that's what I meant by it. So like if someone wants to do that with you, they're playing the victim card. They're taking you for a fool. They are insulting your intelligence.
Yeah.
And they want you to do all the emotional heavy lifting, which I'm not going to do. Point blank, period. End of discussion.
I'm sorry you feel that way. That's the one.
Oh my God, when someone tells you, I'm sorry. I cannot. No, the door's that way, babe.
And let it hit you where the sun don't shine.
Or if someone goes like, I'm expecting an apology from you. Sorry, what?
Well, everyone's leaving this room disappointed.
Literally. Yeah.
No.
Compromises where neither party gets what they want. And right now, we're not doing this.
No.
No.
I just have this thing about... So... Einstein's definition of insanity is repeating the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. And I find that people find themselves stuck in similar cycles, different people, different story, but same energy, mm-hmm. same overarching theme. And I'm so comfortable cutting someone off because I know what I bring to the table. I know how much I will love you. I know how ride or die I am for you. I know how abundant my mindset is because I came from nothing. So when I rise, I want my people to rise with me. When I step forward, I'm holding your hand, taking you with me. And as you know, sometimes غصبن عنك, I will drag you just because even if you don't think you deserve it, even if you're not ready, sometimes you just need that helping hand. So if I reach a point where it's like, I'm good, you can go. I'm good, you can go. And you will never find me again. Never, ever, ever, ever. And there's no need. I bumped my chin into this. Uh-huh. There's no need for us to hash this out or talk about it again because you didn't have to do me the way you did me. Like, you knew what you were doing. Mm-hmm. Especially if I'm holding your hand that tightly, I've let you know the demons that I fought. I've let you know the darkness that I've been thrust into. I've let you know the hurt that people have caused and brought my way. So you know, and you know, because I've told you. And then you go ahead and you behave in that same mannerisms, in the same way. You can go, bro. Mm-hmm. And again, one of the most unforgivable sins to me is to try to mess with someone's livelihood, with the food on someone's plate or the spoon in my mouth, you know, or my family's mouth, God forbid. So I will never mess with how you make your money or where you earn your money from. More blessings to you, and I hope God is always filling your cup. But you will never eat at my table again. Oof. Mm. And if I see you starving, I will not hand you a meal. We need to stop saying that people don't know how they're moving. Because people know how they move, and people know what they're doing, and people know the effect of their words and their actions and their gossip and their whispers. Mm-hmm. They know, otherwise they wouldn't do it. That sense of empowerment that they get when they see you falter, when they see you fumble, when they see you fall, especially if it comes from their way. And then to just drop and say, oh no, but I'm so innocent and mm-hmm. I'm just a bystander and I don't do anything. No, you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And we need to stop treating people like they don't know what they're doing. Accountability needs to come back. I know the power of my words. I know the power of my actions. And I know the limitations of what I can and cannot do. And I very much know when I've hurt someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
It's very ignorant and very stupid to sit here and go like, no, I don't know the hurt that I've caused. I know very much who I've wronged and when I've wronged them. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I wouldn't have done it.
Yeah. But you know what's interesting? And I will like give you credit for this because I think that you're the kind of person like, if you feel a certain type of way, whether it's correct or incorrect in a conversation, if someone calls you out and you're wrong, you'll take it. Like, you're not going to be like, no, and your ego gets in the way. No, you'll be like, you know what? I've thought about it and I think that maybe you're right, or maybe I'm wrong, or maybe this, like, you will allow for an alternative reality to exist, if but for a moment, just so you can reevaluate the situation, or reevaluate the situation flambéche, as we like to say.
I try.
And I really want people to know that don't know you personally, that, like, if you're wrong, you will say you're wrong.
Mm.
Or if you falter in any way, you'll come back and you'll be like, and that's just all about growth. And it's all about you admitting that, like, perfection is the thing that we aspire to be. But, like, there is only one person that's perfect in this world. Oh, who has been in this world?
Prophet alayhi salatu salam.
Absolutely. Facts. Exactly. Like, so you aspiring to be the best version of yourself is something that people should really admire out of you.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. You're very much the same, by the way. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things that I love about you. If the price for bettering myself and becoming a better human and just a better soul in the limited time that I have on this earth is me admitting I am at fault or I am wrong, that is a breeze. I'll say I'm wrong all day long. I'll scream it from the rooftops. I made a mistake. Oh, wait, maybe I made the wrong decision. Or maybe I'm at fault in this situation. If that is the price to pay to be better and so that God is happy with me, that is, babe, I'll pay that price with a smile on my face. I'll be wrong every day of the week and twice on Sunday. Mm-hmm. If it means I get to be a better person. This resistance, aggressive resistance that people have towards just being like, hey, babe, maybe you were wrong. It's insane. It's so delusional. Mm-hmm. It's so out of touch with reality. And I, God help you when you meet your God, because what are you going to tell him? I'm not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be wrong any day of the week. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's like, if I have to just sit back and go like, hey, maybe I was wrong. Maybe Sarah's right.
Mm-hmm.
And that means I get to be better. Mm-hmm. Okay, happy go lucky. Because it means you're happier. Babe, mm-hmm. I've tried the whole I'm right, you're wrong. It's a miserable existence.
The things that I won't tolerate in discussions or arguments, and this is something like I literally will not tolerate, is it takes a lot for me to do something consciously that is to the detriment of your well-being. I will not do something to wrong you deliberately or consciously, or I will have an objective to hurt you or to see you fall or, you know, anything like that. So if I'm upset and I'm coming to you about something, you best believe I'm right in this situation, because I wouldn't come to you if there was something that you've done something wrong. And because very, very rarely do I do something deliberately or consciously to hurt somebody.
Yes.
So the things that I will not tolerate in a discussion is when someone goes like, you know, you need to be accountable because you're wrong in this situation. Oh, no. In this situation, I'm right. Like,
not just that. Why did you wait for me to come up and open this topic with you? Then you suddenly go like, oh, but you. No, if you took the time to come approach me with something that's weighing heavy on your heart, in kirizatik, I need to deny myself and my ego for a second and listen to you. Because if I had a problem, I should have come to you to begin with.
Yeah, that's a logical way of looking at things. But if somebody is so deeply entrenched in their ego and they want to get defensive, they will gladly offer you to share in the blame with them. They will gladly distribute the blame, and they will put it on you, and they'll say, yeah, but you did this and you did this. And they'll remind you about something that happened 7,000 years ago, which has nothing to do with the current situation, but they will insert it to justify and further entrench themselves in victimhood.
Yeah,
they will
of course.
Love to do that. So for me, if I come to you about something that's upset me, you best believe this was something where there was a conscious decision of you hurting me and me being right about it and you being wrong. So like, I won't come out of nowhere. I will not overplay my hand in being like, you know, oh, like, this upset me and blah, blah, blah. No, it's not going to happen. Because like, very rarely have we argued, right? And if we have, it's always been in a situation where it's like, I didn't like the way that this went down, and I will explain to you why I didn't like this. And then you're like, okay, great. We'll think about it. We'll do this. We'll do that. And we'll have a conversation. And you've been very
open. Yeah, but it hasn't been towards us treating each other in a certain way.
No.
Alhamdulillah.
Alhamdulillah, yeah. But it's like, when I'm upset about something, I didn't just get upset in a vacuum. It didn't just happen upon me.
I didn't just wake up and decide I'm going to be upset today.
Exactly.
I always say this.
So, you know, that's why it's like, even generally with friends, I rarely argue. Like, you know how like there are those like podcasters that will be like, oh my God, it's healthy to argue and all this kind of stuff.
It's okay. Not.
Why?
Do you know, actually, in Islam, because you're a contrarian and you love debating, and I hate it. This is where we are extreme opposites. But even in Islam, there's an adab to debate. Mm-hmm. People are only meant to come and debate if I have the intention to come and genuinely try to understand you, mm-hmm. and prove that you are right. Mm-hmm. And you have the intention to genuinely try to understand me and prove that I am right. Mm-hmm. So if I come and approach you with, I'm like, I want Sarah to be right. I genuinely want her to win this. Mm-hmm. And you come with the same attitude, mm-hmm. then we can debate, then we can talk, then mm-hmm. we can be civil, then we yeah. can come to an understanding, because we're laying our hearts on the table in the most divine way possible. But when you come at a debate with an ego and a narcissistic attitude and a, ha, I got one over you, and interrupting each other and one-upping each other, it's like you might as well be pigs in a mud pit. Mm-hmm. It's disgusting.
Yeah, 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 I agree.
And it causes more of a rift between people. That's why when people ask me, but don't you think it's healthy to debate? Absolutely. The way modern day debating happens, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. And it goes against the principles of Islam. Mm-hmm. So no.
Well, since we are almost out of time, I do want to ask you a question. Mm. You're going to turn 30 in literally like 2 days.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about that, turning 30? And what are the learnings that you can like share with people on this journey of like hitting the 3-0?
3-0. I'm so excited. I've known three things my whole life. I used to say two, but I've actually known three things my whole life. One of them has happened. The second one was that I'd die before I hit 50. I've always said this. And the third thing was I always knew the 30s would be the best years of my life. Always knew it. I'm so excited for my 30s. I really think this is where everything God has put me through up until today is to get me ready for what's going to happen in 2 days. So very grateful. I could say all the cliches. First and foremost, find God. I'll say this till the day I die. But I could say all the cliches, but I think...
What about relationships?
I'll say one thing, other than relationships, because girl, I don't know. But I'll say one thing, and I'll take it into everything in my life. Work, relationships, parents, siblings, friendships, strangers, anything. And I think it'll summarize everything we've discussed today. There's a famous, I believe he's a poet... an Arab poet, المتنبي, and he says, إذا لم يكن من الموت بد فمن العار أن تموت جبانا, which means if death is inevitable, it is a shame to die a coward. And I think this applies to everything. If push comes to shove, your back's against the wall, do not meet your God a coward. So if you have to stand up to someone more powerful than you, just to meet your God knowing that you did what's right, do it. If you have to exit a relationship that's toxic and you're going to be on your own in the streets, just to not meet your God. I didn't think I'd cry.
Do you have your tissue?
Yeah, I do. Why am I crying? It's because I'm sick. I get emotional when I'm sick. But yeah, you can't meet him, a coward. Why am I crying? Ugh. I hate crying.
No, because you've been through a lot. Like, for those who are like listening, you've been through a lot of stuff in your life. And at least the one thing that you can say to yourself is that when I said things, I meant them. When I spoke truth. When I believed in things, I believed it with conviction. And so you honored yourself every step of the way. And it took a lot for you to get here.
A lot. Yeah. I was an embarrassment to God. And I say that because I didn't respect the life that he gave me. So yeah, with everything, with relationships, friendships, work, money, even if it means you end up on the streets, don't meet your God a coward, because it's not people that give you love, it's God that sends his love through people. It's not people that give you your salary. It's God who sends a salary through the medium of this person or this job or that employer. So be willing to lose everything just to not meet God a coward. It is the one advice I will give anyone until the day I die. So going into my 30s, I don't care who you are, how much money you have, how much fame, how much power, whatever it is, I will drop you in a heartbeat if it means I don't meet my God as a coward. So that's the one thing I will advise anyone. Whew. Ah, what about you? Because you're 32.
I keep forgetting how old you are. I love you for that. I'm 35.
Yeah, what about you? What's one advice you'd give people at 35?
I mean, I've always said this like over and over and over again, which is it's better to ask forgiveness than to ask permission.
That's what you want to say? Like, that's how we're leaving this?
No, like, I mean, look, my, you and I have had...
I don't think that's what... That's not your actual advice.
No, I mean, like, I'm. That's why I said, like, this is something that I say all the time, because it sets the tone that I cannot do something if I don't wholeheartedly believe it. And I feel like I have been in many situations in my life.
Oh, I know. Are we crying?
I know we are.
What's happening?
I know. That have been very difficult. Have been very difficult. And see, you know, I just said it in this podcast that I don't like to show, to cry and be vulnerable.
Well, you're crying to half a million
people. I know. You're welcome, everyone.
We are disgustingly emotional today.
I agree with you in the sense that, like, I cannot do something with conviction and with honesty and integrity if it's coming from a place of lack. It has to come from a place of abundance.
Yeah.
It has to. And if that means, you know, putting aside my personal feelings in order to help somebody else on their journey, so be it. If it means having to struggle just so I can give someone else money and I'll struggle, fine, I'll do that. Like, those are the learnings that I keep for myself. And to remain radically consistent, like, for all the people that have wronged me in their life, the one thing that they can't say, the one thing they cannot say at all is Sarah was like devious or inconsistent in her dealings.
Or malicious.
Or malicious. Mm. No. You could say anything about me. And we've said this before. There is no one that we haven't encountered, or that at least there have been people that we have encountered that will say, yeah, we were the villain in their books. Yeah, we were the person that played. We were the bad people in their storyline. But I know I did things with integrity.
Yeah.
And I know that if I died tomorrow, I know that I stood for something.
Yeah. Oh, why are we so emotional? I don't like this.
I think it's because we were fasting and we're just so tired and we just want food. I broke my fast with a date because we're filming during iftar time. So we're about to go and enjoy a lovely meal.
And I'm sick.
And she's sick. But like, that's something that, like, you know, honesty, integrity, and authenticity.
Yeah.
Above everything.
I wish people could understand how easily I'm willing to let go of anyone and anything if it makes my God happy. I will drop all the money in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
I'll drop all of this, the podcast, the follow. I don't care. If it risks God being upset with me, I just don't care. Mm-hmm. I just don't care. I'll go to war if it makes God happy. I'll fight if it makes God happy. I'll give up if it makes God happy. I will let go if it makes God happy. But as long as God is happy, we're good. But I will let go of this dunya in a heartbeat because it means nothing. And I wish people would if you move from that place of abundance, that it's God first, everything else is just noise. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Let's wrap this up because khalas.
Khalas, well.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalamu alaikum. No, but thank you for having me on. I hope that you enjoyed this discussion.
I did. I don't know. I don't even know what I'm going to title this. But.
Like tears and more tears. But
thank you for coming on. Thank you for crying with me.
Ramadan Kareem, Ramadan Mubarak, Mubarak alaykum al-shahr. And yeah, and live long and prosper. Don't do anything I wouldn't do.
I just want to go eat oysters. I just want to go eat the oysters.
That's all we want. Have a lovely day. And ma'a salami.
All right. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.